Welcome to the penultimate Morph Club.
Yes. Yeah, I think it is important to say up front, we're going to do at least one more episode of Wrap Up. Which we can talk more about at the end of this episode. But if you guys have questions that you want to ask us about Morph Club or Animorphs or serial narratives in general, you can start sending them into at Morph Club Cast on Twitter, and we would love to chat about those with you next time.
Yeah. I feel like if we tried to make this our last episode, there'd be too many things we'd remember after this week and be like, wait, one more thing. I just thought about something that links up to book blah, 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 blah. And
I just remembered something in book 13 that I desperately need to talk about. Yeah. Like, oh my God, way back in when they were in Area 51, they saw this thing that predicted the end of the book. And no. So we're not done yet.
No. But we did read the final book. And, oh boy.
Megan and I just vented a lot of screaming out of the top of our heads before we're even able to get on this recording session together. I think we both really liked this book.
Yeah, I had a really good time reading it, even though it was like 80% horrible things. Like, it felt right, and parts of it were genuinely like really fun. You know, amongst bad things happening.
Yeah, no, I feel like the more I think about it, the more this feels like the ending that Animorphs deserves.
Yeah.
And I think next week, let's save the final letter on Heractolest that K.A. Applegate wrote to talk about next week. But, like, thinking about this book in the context of that letter helped me place it.
Yeah. I heard there's a second one after the one in the back of this book.
So,
is that what you're talking about?
Yes, that is. The one in the back of this book is very sweet. And then, so a couple, I don't know if it was months or years after the final book came out, people from an Animorphs fan site wrote to her, and the letter she wrote to them in response is like the letter that people talk about, where she talks through, like, this is why I chose this ending. And it is just this uncompromising like a statement of purpose, and the thesis of Animorphs is war is terrible and you should register to vote to help prevent it if you possibly can.
Okay,
so it's really good. We'll talk about that next. We'll talk about that next episode on Morph Club.
Yeah. She's so cool. Okay.
She's so cool. Oh man, this book broke my heart
and then
served it up to me to consume on like the Cinnabon scented platter.
Yeah. Like, oh my God.
Do you like that? Do you enjoy devouring your own broken heart? Great. Let's do it three more times in the space of these next 10 pages.
Yeah. Oh my God. It was like just very satisfying from a like, the endings for everybody felt like right to me.
I think if I read
this when it came out, I might have different feelings, because I think when you're a kid you have a lot more immediate reactions to everything, but like I have the distance as a grown-up person to be like, oh no, this is like how it should end, which is like not something that always happens in these kinds of series, which is kind of cool.
And I can think of some other prominent series where the epilogue at the end of the book just feels like, you know, a fairy tale wrap up. And if we had gotten that with Animorphs, I think my 11-year-old self would have been delighted. But I, as an adult looking back, would have felt it a complete mismatch in tone. So they're kind of like, this book ends three times.
Oh
like
my
there
God.
Are 3 points at which it could be the end of Animorphs, and then, or I guess two of those times, we could then go on to additional time skip information.
Yeah, it felt it felt a lot like one of the like Andalite Chronicles or Elmas Chronicles, where it's like we're watching like a mini series of epilogues, which is really cool. Like, it reminded me of like when you read a fanfic of a series where like the author is clearly more interested in like, well, what are the emotional implications of what happened in the finale? Like, how can I like dive into these characters reacting like more like a real person? But this is all like, this is just this really long epilogue that like has things to say and isn't boring at all. And I just
it's the emotional fallout writ large, and like the consequences of it. Would have been so easy to end this book at at the point where the war is over, yeah. it would have been so easy to say, okay, that's it. It's done. We won. And, you know, it was hard, but it's over now. So it was all worth it. And instead we get this like 100 pages of deep consideration of, was it really worth it? How do each of these characters feel about it? How are they individually dealing with the compromises they had to make to survive this thing?
And it's also like, they definitely did get the best possible win that they could, it seems like, and things are relatively peaceful. Like, there's still problems, but for the most part, Earth seems to adapt pretty well, considering. Like, there are still problems, but, like, in some ways, there's parts where it's like, oh, this probably is the best possible solution, but also, of course, things are still going wrong, and of course, these kids are still haunted by everything, because this isn't like a cartoon.
The best possible solution of many horrible possible worlds does not mean that every individual person involved in it gets out unscathed. Like, nobody gets out of this with clean hands, as Tom said. So, okay, I have a question for you, Meg. So you knew which of the Animorphs dies going into this. Did you know about the scope of this book?
No.
Like, the scale of it? Okay.
I remember hearing that Rachel was the one who died, and I was upset. Mm-hmm. But I had already quit reading.
Yeah.
And I remember being at a Barnes & Noble and looking at the back of this book. And I think I thought, like, they're in space and they're in the Rachel.
Yeah.
But I think I thought that this was still during the Yerk battle. And that Rachel, like, fell doing something involving the ship. And I didn't pay much attention. I basically, like, skimmed the last couple pages. So I was like, this is it? And, like, I didn't expect her to have died in the first, like, 25 pages.
Like, the first 10% of this book. Yeah. I also had forgotten, you called this a miniseries, and I think that's a really apt comparison, and it absolutely feels like one where the camera keeps zooming back and back and back. So it does, a lot of it is about, like, what's going on Earth, but then we also hear later on about, not just what's on, you know, not just what's in going on in the kid's hometown of, like, wherever, California, but, like, what's going on in the Netherlands with this war trial, and what's going on back on the Andalite homeworld, how are the other species they came into contact with doing? And then, like, hey, by the way, the Andalites are part of these other wars? Did you know they have a bunch of other treaties with alien species we don't even know about? Cool. Love that.
There's also, I saw that apparently before this book was written, there was some, like, her contract included one more Megamorph and then some other, I guess, like, Chronicles type book. But those never happened because of, like, contract changes. So I think she said some of what might have ended up in a Megamorph, because I don't even think that had been hammered out in terms of what exactly was going to be in it. So I think, like, they were trying to have that kind of flavor in this because it would be kind of instead of both coming out in the same month. I'm still not 100% clear on what was planned for multiple books, or what was only a vague idea that they were going to finish when they had a deadline and then it got canceled. So it never.
Right. But this does borrow the Megamorphs format of switching narrators between all of the different kids, all the different teens. And I guess, you know what? I don't think any of them make it to their 20s by the end of this book. I think the oldest is 19. So yes, all of the teens get to take turns narrating, which worked incredibly well.
Yeah, it was really liked it. It also, like I didn't register that, like, Tobias only has one chapter and it's towards the end. But it felt like the narrative didn't make me, like, it was mostly like, oh, I wonder what Tobias is actually thinking in terms, like, versus what the rest of the kids think he's thinking. But we didn't need to see into his brain because it was pretty clear until that chapter. And then it was like, oh my God, we haven't heard from him until now.
Right. Oh, and he's doing worse than I thought. Great. He was doing simultaneously both better and also more devastatingly worse. Yeah.
But so, a lot of this was Jake, but that felt right. Like, I liked getting to see Jake, but also he's having a bad time. But
yeah,
I like remembered how much I liked Jake in like the first book because he's still at his core that kid. But all this stuff has happened and it's awful.
Yep. So let's talk about the specific ways in which this book broke our teens and our hearts. So okay. just to warn you, I went through a soft run of this. I tried to explain to three very patient, kind friends yesterday while we were all on like a lunch break from work what happened in this book. And I did start crying like five words in. So this might be a stop and go, a touch and go situation for me. But let's do our best.
Okay, well, it opens right after previous book's end.
Yes.
Rachel
narrating.
Yeah, Rachel's narrating. Rachel knows that she's on a suicide mission.
Yeah. And I love, right from the get-go, she does do this abbreviated version of the introduction that we get in every book. Of like, this is who we are, this is what the Yerkes are. But it's interspersed with these, like, horribly bleak, bittersweet moments of her telling you, like, these are my friends, and I know they love me, and I understand why they did this to me, and it was the right choice. But also, I'm so scared, yeah. I don't want to die. Yeah.
It felt like the goodbye. It felt like the goodbye version of one of those openings.
Yeah. Right. This is rough. If this were an anime, this would be the ending theme. Yeah. Would be playing over Rachel's narration.
That's why, like, I was reading this, like, wait, this is the first 15 pages.
Yep. Yep. Right. This is the first ending of this book. Right. I guess this book ends four times.
Yeah. Oh my god. I do like that she gets to pick her favorite morph to fight in. She picks the grizzly, which is very sad, but also I'm glad she gets to enjoy being a grizzly one more time. Yes.
Oh, and so much of her narration is these little sidetracks about Tobias. So when she's, before we even see Tobias on screen, she's talking about, like, this is the morphing power. And she goes off on this long tangent about, like, I've gotten to be all these animals. I've been a whole zoo. Like, nothing compares to flying with Tobias. Like, there isn't any feeling like that in the world. And it's just, it feels like this rambling, distracted, it felt very real to me of, like, this is, Rachel is scared, and she is letting herself go off on these tangents that she might otherwise be too focused to, in any normal situation, she would have too much battle focus to do this, but she is very frightened girl.
Yeah, it felt like if you could translate, like, when you're having all these thoughts in a moment of crisis, if someone could translate them into something that sounds coherent, it felt like a really good, it was a good writing.
Yeah. Good job. Good job.
Yeah, there's, like, callbacks also. Like, I like that she mentions being a rat and a dolphin, and it was like, oh, yeah, that was...
Remember when their biggest problem was murdering a kid?
I did recently remember the Zone book.
And I was just Zone 69. Like, oh, my God. Nice.
Remember that book where the horse was trying to use the phone
because the Yerk was... Oh, my God, the talking horse Yerks. We've been on quite a journey, haven't we?
This has been a roller coaster.
Yeah.
You referred to this as the King Deca of, and I've never heard something more true. Just going downhill real fast.
Yep. Infinitely, forever, your eyelids turn inside out with the sheer force and weight of this narrative.
Just hope this thing has been engineered correctly, because...
You can't get off this ride. Mr. No. Bones has you on his wild ride and cannot disembark.
So, Rachel
loves Cassie. I'm still hung up on her intro narration, when she's telling you about her friend, she's like, and this is Cassie, she's my best friend, and I love her, and she sees further than any of us, and she sees deep into future possibilities I would never even have dreamed about.
She even gets in a dig about Cassie wearing dirty jeans. She, like, can't help it. She's still herself. She can't not.
I know.
It's rough. I, like, legitimately don't have the book quotes in front of me because it's a lot. But she also, like, has this really strong sense of she is going to take out Tom. Like, Jake trusted her with this, and she knows that she was the best choice for this, and she's the only option, and she's going to do this because she wants to help her friend. Like, she wants to help the Animorphs win, and she doesn't. Yeah. She knows this is what she has to do. So it's like a couple minutes before the end of the last book, because Tom is only just like turning on the transmission with I forget what kind of ship they're in.
I think the Blade ship. Yeah. So he's on the stolen Blade ship calling the Pool ship. Mm-hmm. And it is, I really liked seeing this from Tom's perspective, or yeah. not from Tom's perspective, but Tom's end of things, as he's watching, like, why did they flush the Yerk Pool? That's weird. Yeah. I guess we better hurry and get them on the bridge.
He's
just gloating the whole time.
And it's also like the Pool ship is hard to move at the best of times. Yeah. So he's like, they can't even, it's even worse than usual. It looks like a drunken, he says specifically a drunken Ged appears to be driving. Which I was like, wait, Ged's going to get drunk? When does that happen?
Where is that AU? Show me Ged party AU.
I want them to be happy. What's happening? But then he is, you know, having the video call and he sees, well, Rachel starts to morph as soon as that call begins, because she assumes, like, it's going to be soon. Nobody notices because they're all focused on this intense call. And then when Jake shows up, Rachel strikes and she hits Tom, but then battle breaks out.
Right, because all of the controllers that Tom's brought with him on the Blade ship can also morph. Surprise.
So she, but it's like, I like that as soon as the fight starts, she kind of gets into her, like, her zen place is fighting. Yeah. So, like, she does reach this moment of, like, total peace with what she's doing, which I appreciate it, even though I don't want her to die.
Yeah. She does. She gets to have a couple of moments of just being an Amazon. Yeah. Like, I forget exactly what she says, but when she morphs and everybody else morphs, and she's like, she's a grizzly bear facing like a lioness and like a cape buffalo and some polar bears. And she's like, are you scared? You should be. And thought speak to all of them.
And she also says, it was my moment. This was my place and my time and my own perfection. I was no longer afraid.
Oh,
it's so good.
It's so good.
And also, like, she's the grizzly, and she was like, these other people had bear morphs, but I am this grizzly. Like, she is these morphs that she's been in for so long. But, you know, then she has this horrible,
battle. The fight is brutal. The fight is a lot of, like, Rachel's doing her best, but she's facing, like, 4 or 5 giant battle morphs. So Tom starts morphing Cobra and gets out of her range.
Yeah.
So she's damaged him, but she hasn't killed him yet.
And I think his venom gets in her eyes, so she can't see so great.
Yeah, so she's, like, partially blinded. And then, you know, it does the thing of, like, I think somebody hacks through her spine and she can't feel her back legs.
Oh my God,
so then she's, like, groping around blindly on the floor trying to find this snake. And she calls out for Tobias to help her.
Yeah.
And he has this moment where he's just like, I can't. Yeah. I don't know what you want. I can't help you. And that, my heart broke.
It's really
again.
Sad. Because they're watching on their video screen the whole time. It's awful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But
then she explains to him, like, it'd be my eyes, like, help me find Tom.
So she's able, like, with his direction, she grabs the snake and bites down on its head. So she ends up demorphing with the snake head in her mouth, which is so brutal and gross. But she's able to demorph to her human self, which is kind of a fake out, because I was like, wait, I thought. And then, one of the controllers is still there.
Yeah. So she has this brief moment. Oh, I am going to cry.
No!
I need a second.
Mm.
Ooh. Okay. I think there might be a point where we just have to leave in me crying, because I'm just going to cry, and that's okay. So. Rachel demorphs to human. And there's, like, this brief moment where she's able to, like, take a step back and look up at the screen and see Cassie and Jake and Marco and Axe. And then she sees Tobias.
Yeah, and Tobias has morphed human because he's crying, but I guess he wants her to know, or at least subconsciously wants her to know, that he feels so much about her. And she says, I love you, to the screen. But then the remaining controller in polar bear morph takes her out.
Yeah, and there's, like, her her narration in these last couple of seconds is so good mm-hmm. and so weighty and devastating and sad. This is one of the like the two quotes I was able to screen grab in yeah. between crying so hard oh I could God. Not see my laptop screen. Oh, I'm going to need two takes at this one. but she says, while she's looking at Tobias and seeing him crying and telling him she loves him, she asks, how could so much regret and so much sweetness and so much sadness all be present in that single moment? I was already dead and missing my unlived life. I was already dead and Tobias was mourning me. And then she tries to smile.
Yeah, it's so brutal. It's so well written, but it's so brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's...
And then the polar bear kills yeah, her. Yeah,
and then she's just dead. That's, like, it's really final and sad. And then the next chapter is the Elemist with the... Like, from the end of the Elemist Chronicles, where we didn't know which kid he was talking to.
Right. And seeing this with Rachel's extra layer of narration on top of yeah, it made it really so rough. Much more brutal, which I didn't remember that she tells us about, like, how much she wants to live and how much she wants to stay.
Yeah. That's, like, the hardest, like, it was really... Because, like, before she... When she was in the battle, she felt like she was, like, in the right place. Like, this was, like, her moment to really be the most Rachel. Yeah. But then when she's with the Elemist and she knows she's dead, that's when she most is like, I want to live. I don't want this to be the end. But she doesn't have a choice. And the Elemist, I was still comforted by the Elemist telling her that, like, she mattered and she did the right thing and everything. But, like, the Rachel's narration ends with her starting a thought of, I wondered if, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And I wish she was still alive so I could know what she was thinking. it was, like, really well done, but really rough.
Yeah, no, this was, I don't ever want to say, like, a death is earned, but this yeah. was a really weighty thing, and I felt like it was, Oh boy. No, I'm still snotty.
No, I
felt like you could really, really feel the weight of this.
Yeah, like, it felt like, I was thinking about the stuff that happened with James's team in the previous book, where, like, their deaths were, it, like, as a reader, I was like, oh, I wish they didn't have to die, but it didn't feel this weighty and this, like, intense, partly because we never got in their heads. We never had their narration. They weren't with us that long. So I think with this, they, like, gave it as much... Like, they haven't ever had to write a main character dying this way, despite yeah. these books having a lot of death. So, like, they did a really good job of making this one really feel... A lot. I'm running out of words for
yeah, no, Megan, thank you. Megan has been carrying this conversation while I sit quietly on my end of the call running through tissues like it's nobody's business. So thank you.
No, I...
Oh boy, I got it. I'm back yeah. together. I can keep talking about these books now, but I can't, I cannot even look at. I have like a screen cap of the Elemist and Rachel's last exchange, and every time I look at it, I tear up again, so I cannot even try to read it for you.
This is like a litmus test for how people deal with... Where you actually feel the full feeling, and I just detach further into... But listen,
we balance yeah. each other well. That's why this podcast works.
That's why we've
that's
made
why more club works.
To 54 books.
Oh my god, this is so many books.
Well,
okay, so there's an ending.
That's the that first is, ending that yeah. I thought that would be the ending. So I was yep. like, wait, what? Because then, like, in the next chapter,
gotcha.
Next chapter basically is them setting up the war to be over. So it's like, wait, what? Is this gonna be a fake out? yeah, because Jake, remember
Wait,
Jake?
So now we swap into switching between the rest of the kids yeah. for the rest of this book.
And Jake is stuck on this. Like, this is where I was like, this is full Evangelion. Jake is full Shinji at the end of Evangelion, just staring uh-huh. into space, and he has this, like, really like, very real. Like it felt really emotionally true, but also kind of like, you when you're stuck on an emotion that's like just really kind of unreasonable, and like he's like, how am I going to explain to anyone that I had my cousin kill my brother? Like, of course you're stuck on that. You're like still a kid. Like, you're still a person. But he has to like be the leader of this thing.
So Toby, the Hork-Bajir seer, who was leading the free Hork-Bajir in this battle against a bunch of controllers elsewhere on the ship, breaks into the bridge to tell them all the Yurks are surrendering. They want a chance at the morphing power, but they're gonna give up. We're gonna win this immediate battle. I don't know what else is happening. I really like the detail that the moment when she figures out that something's extremely wrong is when she sees Tobias in human morph, which he almost never is in these days.
Yeah. And they explain that they just saw Rachel die. Tom is dead. And I like that Toby, like, listens to that for a minute, but then says that her father,
Jarrah Hami also died. I really like that too.
Yeah.
That struck me as such a smart way to remind us, like, yeah, we know you love these kids best because you've seen it in all their heads, but like, they are not the only people who have suffered losses by a very long shot.
Yeah. I like that she didn't like yell at them, hey, other people, but it was like that kind of like calm, like, hey, I'm also dealing with this. We need to keep it together. Like, I need you. I think it was like she was asking for backup for,
you have to go negotiate with the rest of these Yurks. Like, they won't listen to me. They need Jake.
Yeah.
And Jake is still like fully dissociated.
Oh my God.
Like, the way he describes it, it's literally like, I'm watching myself from a million miles away. Like, I can recognize the impact that these things are having on me, but I'm not in my body. I can't deal with this.
Yeah. And the roughest part for me was that he knows Cassie is going to try to say something, and he's afraid of her comforting him.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that feels so real. Like, that's like a really real thing to feel. But then Cassie, of course, says the right thing where she just goes, Jake, you're not done.
We still need you.
Which is like, he needs to hear that. He needs to get it together. He can't feel all of this right now. He has to be...
Right, so just throw that in Juliet. Worry about it later, once
just
this is over.
Repress that just for one day, at least. We gotta...
Oh my God.
He's a horse.
War's not over.
He hasn't even gone through, like, he hasn't finished high school.
He doesn't have a driver's license, I know. So Jake can't look at Tobias, which is awful and devastating and very real. And I had forgotten that throughout all of this, Visser One in Alarin's body is just standing there.
I do like that. Like, Visser One was like really quiet during all of this. And then like, he's like, well, Jake, you're gonna have to kill me.
Right.
And then he's like, well, you know, because I know you're like, he's like appealing to Jake being a decent person, because he's like, well, if you don't kill me, who knows what the Council of 13 will do to me.
Right. So. Like, the horrible torture they're gonna put me through. Like, there's no comparison.
He's just like the worst even now. Even now.
Uh-huh.
And Jake...
At his very last stand,
And Jake is just like... His decision now is, Visser One is a prisoner of war. We can't kill nobody. Nobody else dies.
And Visser One's reaction is, oh, of course not. Merely destroy the Yurk pool and kill thousands and other 17,000 on the ship. All defenseless sentient creatures. But, oh, of course you can't kill prisoners.
I mean, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. Yeah. And it's also like, you can so clearly see the thread of Jake's. The thread of Jake's thoughts from, like, how am I ever going to explain to people all of these people that have died at my command?
Yeah.
And, like, this one thing maybe I can do right, even if in the moment it means I'm just going to be mercilessly razed by my longest enemy. My longest enemy? My longest standing enemy. Mr. One, the longest Andalite.
Nose to tail, the longest enemy. So basically he's like, yeah, no, you're my prisoner of war.
Get the heck out of Alaran's body.
Get out of this bod. We're going to put you in a jar.
Where is the... Okay, yeah, sorry. We'll come back to the jar because I love the jar.
The actual container was, like, one of the first moments of, like, oh, yeah, there's still things to laugh at. But,
So he gives everybody missions. Mark has got to watch Visser 1 until he gets out of this body. Cassie has to go get Eric to hide. Visser 1 has to get out of this body. And Axe needs to call Andalite High Command the civilian network.
That's after knocking out Aloran's body.
Oh, yeah.
So that the Yurt has to come out. But, yeah, Axe has to ask Jake for, like... permission?
Oh, that was cute. Yeah, he was like,
oh, he's
Jake,
still himself.
My prince, I simply cannot possibly contact the civilian high command directly. My prince, unless I were, like, wink, wink, directly ordered to do so, my prince.
Like, he can't stop. He can't stop. So they decide to fill a Yurk pool for the other remaining controller, and they basically just tell them, like, you need to leave the body that you're inhabiting, but we'll figure something out for you if you agree to this peacefully.
Right. Jake promises them he doesn't have morphing tech, but he's going to do literally everything he can in order to get them a chance to do this permanent morphing and relocation.
Yeah. Cut to Cassie. And Cassie, understandably, is already, like, broken up over what happened to Rachel. She has some, like, really sad, like, basically, like, an elegy for Rachel, where she's, like, she was this person who, like...
She could dig in mud in a white dress and come out spotless. It was, like... There's just something magic about her.
And it was, like, that kind of, like, sort of rose-tinted memories of someone, but also with, like... But also she was...
Right, but also the war did scar her, and she was changed. It was, like, both simultaneously a really... through that lens of, this is my dear friend who I care about, and that's going to color everything I think of them, and, like, a very real assessment of, like... And also, this war has messed us all up beyond repair.
Yeah, Cassie. Cassie. But Cassie has to keep it together. So she goes to find Eric, who I didn't think that I would... dislike Eric this much by the end of the series.
I want to understand him, but I really had difficulty with that.
Like, I don't know how I feel about this character at this point. Because I can't tell, like, I just still feel like what they asked him to, like he kind of makes his argument here where he talks to, because Cassie finds him. And she says that Jake wanted her to come find him, and he thinks at first that that means Jake is feeling guilty, but Cassie is immediately like, no,
you are the reason why Rachel had to do this thing.
And Cassie's mad, which she's not usually the one who gets mad. And so, like, Eric is basically saying, like, well, you, like, took me prisoner, blackmailed me into helping you kill a million Yurks.
Thousands of, but it feels, like, I agree that Eric has absolutely been wronged. Like, he's always felt this weird kernel of, like, I guess resentment towards the Animorphs for that first, like, violence they got him to do. And they didn't treat him well. I would never argue that they treated him well in this last couple of books, but... It felt like such a vindictive act for him to drain the Draken beams. Like,
that felt like...
It felt harmful, like a deliberate malice.
Yeah, because it's not... Like, that's no longer... That doesn't feel like you are... Like, I guess it was, like, him trying to make everyone else be a pacifist in this situation. So, like, I understand why this character would do it, I guess. But it's also, like... You can't make that choice for everyone else when you're in this situation. Like, this isn't...
Right. They've always been willing to let the Animorphs get their hands dirty before. Yeah. And by they, I mean the Pimelites, right? They've never told them, like, we don't want you fighting the Yurks.
Yeah, they always... it seemed like they couldn't fight for anything, but they wanted Earth to be safe. Like, they wanted this planet that the Pimalites, the Pimalites before the Chi had found, and like, this is where the protect dogs
the dogs
are.
Right, you gotta keep the dogs
like you
safe.
Can't be mad at these like be mad at the war, not these kids. Yeah. Like, there's no good decisions you can make in a war. Like that's why, like, I'm like on, like, the debate on, like, if Jake did the right thing or the wrong thing, I'm like, in this situation, there isn't a right thing.
There isn't a right thing.
It's,
yeah.
like, it's gonna be bad. Like,
right. There isn't a magical choice anyone could have made to get everyone out of this, smelling like roses. Boy, it's rough,
it's
huh?
really tough. So basically, like, Eric sees that Cassie is mad, and he leaves, and that's the last we see of him?
Yep, that's the last
after
of the Chi.
After he says his piece?
We don't know what happens to the Chi after that. Presumably, they're fine, and the dogs are fine.
Yeah,
he does, like, he takes her hand and is like, you have to take care of Jake. He's gonna need you, which is, like, it's simultaneously, my first read of this was like, oh, that's kind, and then I was like, no, this
oh,
is
no,
cutting to the bone.
That's really rough.
Yeah.
So
thank God the next thing we've cut to is Marco trying to find a container for Visser One.
And so the best thing they find is a briefcase, which is full of cookies, because some Yurk controller snuck aboard some snacks for later, which is so, like...
Big mood, that's
of
me.
Of course! Yeah. Of course they did! Like, look, if I was going into space, I would at least bring some granola bars. But if I had access to my favorite snack, I would put that in there.
I would pack a briefcase full of chocolate chip cookies and get it through a biofilter. I don't care. Yeah.
How
it's
else,
important material.
How else are you gonna get through all this? We should have both been given cookies with this book to get
oh
through
God.
This, and
yeah.
we aren't even in
I'm
it.
I'm gonna go, you know what? We're
oh
adults.
God.
I'm gonna go buy myself a cookie after we finish recording.
Oh my God. I think I need to.
Yeah, no, apology cookies for us, from us.
For us, from us.
Yeah.
So yeah, we do get to see this delightful sequence of Axe and Marco opening cookie suitcase.
Yeah.
Marco eating some of those cookies. and then him going, we could just kill him. But Axe is like, no, we have to do the right thing.
So they put Visser One into this,
Yurk.
Like, cookie crumb briefcase.
Which is, like, that Yurk is going to get, that Yurk, you know that Yurk is slimy.
Yeah.
That Yurk is going to
oh,
get
no.
all kinds of, like, suitcase lint and cookie crumbs all over his gross little slug body.
His dignity is going to be ruined.
And I was also like, oh, is he going to be able to breathe in there? And then I was like, he's a Yurk, he'll be fine.
He's okay. So he's locked up. Axe gets the communication channels ready. There's a brief aside where Marco is like, hey, so I understand what Jake did. I am someone who can see.
Yeah.
I'm not ruthless, but I can see the best way through to the end solution of a problem. And I just have to add morality back in after the fact.
Yeah.
So I understand Jake's decisions today. But I'm not Tobias. I am not a lonely kid who is half human, half hawk, with the love of Rachel being the only thing tying me to my human body. So I don't know if Tobias will ever forgive Jake.
And he also, like, when they're watching the Yurk climb out of the ear, he's like, I wasn't sure if Tobias was going to swoop in and grab the Yurk, and I don't know if I was going to stop him, but he doesn't. I also like that Marco, like, very coldly in his description was like, I didn't love Rachel. Like he's like able to separate like his like feelings of like crushing on her and like teasing her from like what Tobias is feeling.
Felt. Yeah.
But yeah. And then Marco is just like, I guess we won, Axe. And they're all just kind of sitting there with a Yurk in a briefcase. Like, it's so
Marco's still cramming cookies into his mouth.
Look, if I was, I would be eating every cookie. I'd be stress eating.
Please.
When is
the last time these kids have had a meal or a nap? I do not know. Please give
it's
them
like
some
still,
goddamn cookies.
This is the same day.
This
is the worst day of their lives.
So,
time to call the Andalites.
Oh, boy.
So
they get in touch with, like, this junior officer on, like, the Andalite high command ship. Axe quietly patches them through the civilian network, but doesn't tell the Andalites about this. The Andalite that they're talking to immediately thinks they're all controllers. It's like, yeah. Oh, of course, like, obviously yeah. you're all Yurks. Of course you're telling me that, like, this pool ship is defenseless. Great, that seems likely.
And then they realize, like, oh, yeah, that's true. How we can't, like, how are we going to convince him? There's, like, nothing we can say. And then Aloran wakes up from being knocked out.
I love this scene.
I didn't expect this at all. Like, for some reason, I expected him to just straight up die. So I didn't expect him to sort of pop up and be able to help them. But he is, like, giving them, like, the tactical. He's like, okay, we should say that we're going to give him this ship. They can come aboard and negotiate with us. I'm a
We'll disable all the weapons. Right. By the way, do you know me? I'm the butcher of Fork Vajir. I'm one of the greatest war princes you've ever known, with all of the messy baggage that goes along with that. Do you even know who I am?
Yeah. So the Andalites are like, hold on. They get a hire.
Let me call my dad.
You know, let me call Dad. I need to get Prince Dad to come. So higher level Andalite shows up and is like, what?
Aloran goes through this litany of, like, here are all the things we're going to do to make this pool ship helpless. We'll destroy all the bug fighters. We'll drain our engines. Yeah. We'll, like, drift away to a point in space where you can capture a pool ship, which is going to be, like, the greatest thing any Andalite has ever done. And despite all this, the captain, like, starts to refuse. Like, starts to say, like, starts to turn this offer down.
Yeah. He starts to, like, say what they all know they were going to do to Earth. But then Marco pops up and as in his part of, as like the awkward human on the call is like, hey, what's up, Andalite home world? and suddenly everything changes because the general knows that the Andalite home world civilians are watching. So he can't say what the real
plan by was. The way, we were just gonna blow up Earth anyway, so why don't we go ahead and do that? Super chill.
Yeah. And on our friend's side of the call, they start being like, oh, it's so great, we're gonna broker this peace, we're so excited to have this peaceful ending to this war that we've been fighting for so long. You're being so helpful.
Right. So Jake is essentially buttering this Andalite high commander up extremely well, and I really like this sequence because Marco is narrating, he translates like every line of this extremely diplomatic front that Jake is putting on into like Marco's cynical look of like every time Jake says something like, oh, you know, like we really no one will ever be able to like besmirch your honor again, and Marco's like, but if you kill us all, everyone will see it in the background. It's a good contrast, and it's also a good reminder that these kids have had to navigate so many horribly fraught layers of this kind of political mess. They're not kids anymore.
Yeah. Like, Jake, you've learned on the streets how to negotiate in these situations. You can't learn that in school. So I guess I take back what I said. You've learned well. Tiny.
But at what cost?
Yeah, no, it's bad. So
they do the thing. Yeah. Dome ships show up to take the pool ship into custody, as Aloran described. So they, like, blow up all the bug fighters and drain the engines. And they start getting ready for what they think is going to be, like, not a council of war, but, like, a treaty, I guess?
Yeah, like a negotiation treaty.
Of, like, what the terms of the peace might be.
Yeah.
So Marco's advising Jake on, like, here's the demands, here's what we're going to need to try to stand our ground for, here's what we're going to want to do. And he makes some joke, and they both start laughing for the first time in what feels like days, and then Tobias glares at them, and Cassie tries to make peace. She's like, Tobias, if Rachel were alive, wouldn't she want us to enjoy this? And Tobias says, I don't know, if she were alive, I'd ask her.
Yeah, it's really hard, but I also think Cassie isn't wrong.
Like, yeah, no, I don't think either of them are wrong.
It's like there's no right answer, because this is how things are, and it sucks. So the Andalites are there.
It's cute. There's, like, a couple of cute details of, like, the junior tech nerd Andalites, like, excitedly checking out the pool ship.
And also, like, they're all like, wait, that's Aloran. This is so cool. Oh. I really liked, like, oh, yeah, there's people who haven't been horribly traumatized.
By Visser One and his
They're
body.
They're so young.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, the contrast between them and the Animorphs is difficult.
So the Andalites start to demand, like, what are you talking about giving taxons, like, morph abilities? That's
right. Right. Ridiculous. They object to that, and they object even more strongly to one of Jake's initial conditions. Is he's like, oh, we've got a couple of details to figure out before we hand this pool ship over and you can be on your merry way. We're going to have to give all the Yerks the ability to morph, and we're going to, like, give them a chance to permanently morph into a different form. At which point, the Andalites are just flatly like, no, we refuse. Yeah. We won't.
This is, like, he's like, this is Andalite technology. You shouldn't have had it in the first place. We're not going to...
Right, we're, like, being generous already by not prosecuting you for having this technology.
And then Axe steps forward and challenges the captain.
Yeah, this is really good. There's, like, a couple of paragraphs where it really feels like they're not gonna win this one. That Jake is gonna have to break his promise to all the Yerks, and that, like, the war might just start up over again because, you know, this is the long game that Cassie was playing, or that, like, some level of her unconscious mind was playing when she gave them the morphing cube in the first place. Like, this is not a perfectly peaceful solution, but, like, this seems like the only way to prevent the Yerks from going off and trying to conquer another species is, like, give them a way to live that doesn't require them to be parasitic. And the Andalites are just like, no, flat out no. Cassie tries to talk her way through it. Marco tries to talk them into it, and they're just refusing.
And the Andalites do take this challenge seriously, but they're like, you can't challenge. You're not a war prince. You need to either be a war prince or have one to back you up. And then Aloran's like, I'm a war prince. I back him up.
It's very good.
And then the Andalites do take it very seriously. They go off to discuss amongst themselves because
they're going to, like, call the Andalite High Command to try to figure out if they should, like, what they should do about this challenge. And it's like, it's a bigger deal than I thought. I thought it was going to be like a very dramatic Axe has to tailblade battle the captain. Yeah, but no, it's like, essentially, Axe was like throwing down a gauntlet and not, I challenge you to a duel, but I challenge you to a legal trial. This is like some Phoenix Wright stuff.
Oh my god.
Because he like explains it to them. He's like, no, it might be the case that they accept my challenge, and if we do, like, it'll be weeks of, like, negotiation and a very drawn out, lengthy process where we make arguments for and against, and if I lose, I'll be exiled and my tailblade will be cut off. And it's a really dangerous situation. But it's a trial. It's a trial.
I'm, like, delighted by the Andalite bureaucracy machine.
Me
like,
too.
Oh, they have all these levels of, like infrastructure for war-related.
This was one of the few times I've seen part of Andalite war culture and been delighted by it.
Instead of horrified.
Anyone can challenge a superior officer at any time if they think that the superior officer's orders are going against, like, what the general populace, what the electorate would think is moral. So it's like anybody can stand up to an order they're given and say, no, that's morally wrong, I won't do that, which is cool and good.
Yeah.
But it's such a rare bright spot in a sea of, like, hey, the Andalites are just at war all the time and they don't know how not to be.
Yeah. So they talk this over for a while. The Animorphs quietly freak out as they wait for the news.
They have a really good chat with Aloran again. Yeah. I was not thinking a redemption story was in the cards for him, but it's really sweet.
He, like, waggles his tail and he was like, I did that.
Yeah.
I moved that tail. And I was just like, oh my god.
And he gives Jake this really sweet speech about, like, you know, I'm going to be the butcher of Hork-Bajir forever. I've made all of these mistakes, but I may be disgraced and I may be despised, but whatever I'm worth, I'm yours to command, which is very...
Yeah.
I think Jake needed that very badly. But of course, it also sets him off on this tangent of, like, if Aloran is still known as the butcher of Hork-Bajir, like, all of these years later, with all of these other things under his belt, what does that make me?
Yeah. I mean, this is all, like, stuff that Jake thinks about later on is so clearly being brought up in the beginning. Like, it's So the Andalites come back with their decision. The highest up has left. They send, like, a lower tier person to come and say that Axe is now a war prince and he has to be in charge of organizing the four morph cubes they're giving them to give taxons and your morph abilities. And...
Right, but they're going to do it. They're going to do it. The shorter answer is Axe is going to liaise between the Andalites and Earth.
I do feel like it is like, hey, if anything this goes wrong, it's fully your problem. So I think that's the best, that's like the only solution that they would have been able to give them.
Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah. The war's over. Page 57. So
that's the second ending of this book.
Page 57, end of the war. There's still so much book left.
Oh my God. Right. This is maybe a quarter of the way into this book.
I kept waiting. Like, I honestly kept waiting for like.
Turn a page and the rest is just blank.
Yeah. Or like Visser 1 had like snuck out of that briefcase and back into someone's body and was going to duel them or something. But no, this is about, you know, a little bit more real.
Yeah.
Bad stuff happening than just
more
like,
subtle, I think. Yeah.
Than just the villain you thought was gone is back. So
that's ending two. Ending three is very brief. Ending three is Cassie's chapter.
Cassie explains that they were on the ship for a little while, but they end up returning to Earth. They negotiate with the Andalites to keep Visser 1
to stand trial.
At this point, that's like a guess we're gonna have a trial.
Yeah.
They return to Earth. They have a press conference on the Mall, and I do like that Cassie is like, you know, the Mall, not a mall. This is the National Mall, you know, where the monument is. They have like a press conference.
Right. That's like the first thing they do is they land the ship with Axe. So it's all of the remaining Animorphs plus Axe talking with the national press and the president, presumably.
Yeah.
And just like all of America's political power. In the middle of this press conference, Tobias just flies away.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I don't blame him. The next paragraph is they found a body in space.
Yeah.
Which for a second, because the paragraphs are like one and then the next, I thought that meant that Tobias had morphed Rachel or something, or morphed some human female, because they specify that it's a woman's body and like had been found in the air, but no, this is Rachel's body. I did like that the Andalites, they
like treated her the way they would treat like the death of an Andalite war hero.
Yeah, like I appreciate that they were like they felt that they could do that for the Animorphs. So they have a funeral, which is also heartbreaking. I really liked that Cassie said that, like, Rachel would have liked it, but she also would have laughed at it. Like, which, like, I like that she's remembering her as a full person. Because, of course she does, because they were, like, all so close.
So she knows that Rachel would have cracked up at how over the top it is. There's like an Andalite honor guard. There's like a human military honor guard. I think the president is there, and like Jake gives a speech, and Marco gives a speech, and then the president of the United States gives a speech,
which they don't say is what's her face from.
Oh, I wish it were. Yeah, the governor of California, who I love so dearly.
Maybe it's in like the next time skip they mention the president is a woman. So I was like, I assume it was.
The governor, I think
she's cool.
She's so good.
And look, if you've helped the Animorphs run on that platform for 20 years,
take it to the bank, boys. I'm a morph supporter.
So at the funeral, they have Rachel cremated, and there's an urn, and everyone's crying because it's very sad. Tobias shows up and like grabs the urn with his little bird feet. And Rachel's mom is full out sobbing, but nods at him, and he flies away with her remains, so sad.
He lifts the urn and takes it up into the sky, and that is the third ending of this book.
Yeah.
That could have been the end of Animorphs also. Yeah.
Guess what? It's a year later. Page 63!
Time skip number one.
Marco is in a mansion? Like, this is where it became, like, especially, like...
Fanfic.
Fanficy in a way that I love. Like, this is, like, I love fanfiction. This is not in any way...
Oh, yeah. No. Anytime I say that, it is in a delighted, please lean all the way into this thing kind of way.
Just, like...
And it's also felt like this was... this is telegraphed so well in the way, like the hammy way he deals with the Andalite populace and all of the like negotiations that he's been a part of. Like, of course, this is where he would end up.
Yeah, it's like a very emotionally satisfying thing, which is, I think, what I mean when I say it, like, it feels like the writers really wanted to be like, we want to give you like the ending that feels not just thematically appropriate, but like, as someone who loves these characters, we want to show you what they're doing for a little bit longer.
Yeah, it feels like it was written with love in addition to with like bleak purpose.
Oh yeah, because Marco's living a great life, but you can tell he's covering for a deep well of emptiness.
Yeah. Oh my which god! Is and there's like tough. There's some brutal moments where he's like, "You would think that I wouldn't be happy, but I totally am. I'm having like, a great time." Yeah. And I'm like, "My son,
like you're doing well right now, but I feel like you're headed for a big crash."
Yeah.
After everyone else, when everyone else is building themselves back up somehow. So he's got a mansion. He's like,
he's doing the talk show circuit. Yeah, he's like doing a bunch of bit parts on like TV shows.
He's consulting with Spielberg on the Animorph movie.
Yeah.
Because like he's like the best one to interview if you want a TV interview from the Animorphs. Right. He's like the best PR trained.
I like the reasons he gives why Cassie and Jake are not as good, which is like Jake just sits there because he's horribly depressed. Let's move on.
Yeah. Jake's full on clinically depressed, and
Cassie goes on sidetracks about saving the rainforest.
Cassie,
like, you can't get her to stay on brand because she just cares so much, which
she's
is
having,
good.
Like, nuanced discussions about morality
on Letterman.
No. You want this guy to give you a good soundbite for the
blogs.
He's
here for the snappy post.
So he's got a mansion. I am glad that he's living his life. He doesn't mention his mom or dad, I don't think, which makes me nervous.
I have to assume they're okay.
Yeah, I think all of them have grown enough, like so much that it's hard for them to relate back to their family, which is sad. I love that he and Cassie both had bestsellers.
Yes.
And Marco's was The Gorilla Speaks, which was his autobiography. And he was like, Cassie's book, Insights in the Animal Mind, didn't like knock me off the list, but you know, she read a book. Did well, I guess.
Not as well as mine, not that I'm keeping track, says Marco.
And Cassie works for, she's like a alien liaison for the government.
Yeah, she's like the undersecretary of the interior somehow. And she's also taking night classes in college to study to be a vet. And she's working with the Hork-Bajir in Yellowstone and like making sure the taxons as snakes are hanging out okay.
Yeah.
There's like, there is a brief detour where in like two sentences, Marco mentions that Arbron, the Andalite who was trapped in taxon form, was shot and killed by poachers within within the first year after the war ending.
But Marco does say that he thought that Arbron, like, his people were safe.
Yeah.
And Arbron's existence was terrible.
Not an easy one,
So Marco was like, it's really sad, but also he couldn't not be a taxon at this point, so.
Right. And he was able to achieve this great thing, so. It's hard.
Yeah, it's
good
hard.
Reminder that not everything is as hunky-dory as Marco's life right this moment.
I am glad, though, that Arbron got to see his, plans
all the taxons
for the taxon.
There.
And I do like the Hork-Bajir just hanging out in Yellowstone, swinging off the giant trees, and tourists are going to watch them.
You can't. There's, like, a year-long waiting list to camp in Yellowstone because everyone is so excited to see the Hork-Bajir. Speaking of aliens having a great time, Andalite tourism on Earth is here.
I can't.
And you know why they came
believe
to Earth? For the flavors.
They're coming, morphing human, and just having a food tour. And I love it. We joked about stuff like this. I didn't expect it to be canon that, like, they just come to Earth and eat, but I'm so happy.
I'm so glad.
This is what we fought for.
Yeah. And the exchange is, like, Marco's, like, casually mentioning, Andalites get Cinnabons, and we get their Z-Space technology and military weapons, which is like, wow, this really matters to you, huh?
He's like, we had to negotiate so we wouldn't, like, jump forward in technology too fast, which I was like, oh my god, that's so much better than the real world here.
Right. Yep. Oh my god.
Where, like, we aren't thinking about the morality of things before we make innovations. Anyway.
Nope.
Andalite tech. we're gonna have some cool stuff because Andalites want Cinnabon.
Cool snacks. Yeah, it's a fair trade.
Which is, you know, that's how it goes.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Jake is super depressed. DeMarco's like, you know, I haven't seen him in a little while, and when I do see him, he says, he keeps saying he's going to call Cassie, but I'm pretty sure he hasn't. But anyway, ugh, it's fine.
He's not going to college. No, he's not doing anything. Yeah. He's like, Marco's comment on Jake is such a brutal read, which is like, he doesn't want anything yeah. except a chance to redo everything he did at the end of yeah. the war.
He just wants Tobias and Rachel back. That's all he wants. Which is, not a great place for him yeah. to be in.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Visser 1's going to be on trial for war crimes.
Yep. Right. So Marco hasn't seen Jake in months no. at this point. He's like, he hasn't seen Cassie probably in a year.
Yeah.
None of them have, or Marco and Jake haven't seen Tobias. But surprise, you're all going to go to the Netherlands for Visser 1's war trial.
Which, didn't expect there to be a trial in this book.
Nope. Surprise.
I'm having a great time in this Phoenix Wright side yeah. story. So Cassie and Marco meet up before the trial, and they're like, have you seen Jake recently? Is he staying here? What's going on? They have like a little debrief. Marco says that he admits that he spies on Jake in like bird form sometimes, which
that
I love
good.
That yeah. he didn't mention that to us, the narrator, but Cassie warns us out.
Cassie in her narration is like, she is happy to see Marco, and I'm glad that she was, but one of the reasons she mentioned she's glad is she feels like they're the only two real survivors of this war, yeah. which was rough, and yeah. from what we've heard of Jake, absolutely yeah. fits.
Jake has a Jaguar, the car, which made me happy,
yeah.
because Jaguar, but he's not doing great. He's just kind of, like, existing.
Yeah.
He goes to visit Rachel's grave a lot and just kind of sits there. He's not functioning. Like, he's
yeah.
just going through the motions, but he's supposed Cassie, to testify.
Yeah, so they're a little worried about that. Cassie kind of jokingly says, like, Rachel would be so mad at him. Yeah. Like, that's not how she would want to be mourned.
But, yeah, it's not really a joke. Like,
no.
Yeah.
And the two of them get on this topic of, like, oh, like, Cassie still morphs, Marco still morphs. Marco doesn't think Jake has morphed since the war yeah. ended. So they're kind of jokingly talking about, like, morph therapy and, like, it's kind of nice to fly sometimes. Like, yeah. it's great to get to be a dolphin. And they keep going down this thread until suddenly it is no longer a joke. And
yeah.
you can kind of see the light in both of their eyes as they're thinking about, like, how can we get Jake to morph yeah. something fun?
Yeah. And, like, this seems like kind of like a jokey
it feels
premise.
Like a teen, it feels like a teen plan yeah. to me. It feels like a very... a hopeful and youthful thing
yeah.
to be like, if I can just get this person to feel like one moment of joy, then like their clinical depression
yeah.
will be cured.
But,
and of course that's not how yeah. that works. But I also understand where they're coming from.
But it's also like they talk about morphing as like a change of perspective, which
yeah.
feels,
which is useful for
yeah.
sure.
Like it feels right that actually would help a little bit.
Yeah.
Like just knowing that like, oh, you can feel this emotion.
Right.
You're just
It's not
having,
gone forever.
Yeah.
yeah, that's very helpful for, like, not being in the cycle of this is going to be forever.
So it's, like, in a world where morphing exists, I guess I can buy that, like, at least getting him to try it would be something. Like, that gives...
Yeah.
I think that also gives the two of them some kind of, like, we can maybe help
a thing
Jake.
To work on. Yeah, a purpose. Right,
yeah.
we haven't even talked about, like, the weird way that this second book is, like, when war has been... Or the second half of this book is kind of... circling around this theme of like when war has been your purpose, like nothing else compares, and like you're gonna spend the rest of your life looking for
yeah.
something as clear as that clear bright line.
Yeah.
So anytime they get to work together is good, and obviously that's not the case for everybody. Like Cassie is able to find things to do with her life
yeah.
and things that she is really genuinely happy to be working on, but for Marco and Tobias and Jake, they're having a bit of a harder time.
Yeah.
And Axe.
Yeah, because I feel like Marco appears to be adapting well.
Yeah,
but,
later on, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they also mentioned that Andalites might be giving Earth morph technology and like selective, like they might be starting to do that because they want Krispy Kreme.
Yeah,
like they want a Krispy Kreme on their uh-huh. planet because when they go back after their flavor tour.
They miss it.
They want to have some good snacks, which I love so much.
Yep. It's good motivation.
But time for Jake to testify.
Oh my God. This is so hard. This scene is just, it's so bad. I mean, it's great. It's really effective, but it was like being slowly having my fingernails torn out one emotion at a time. Oh, so Cassie and Jake have this like awkward hug.
Yeah.
Is this Jake narrating again?
Yeah.
It must have switched to Jake at some point and I didn't mark it, because Jake tells you like he's come to accept that like what he had with Cassie and even what he had with Marco and Tobias and all of them, like that was just a thing in the war. It doesn't translate over to his life after the war, which is
it's really so rough. Like his narration, like I mean the other kids outright said like he's full on like he's non-functionally. But his narration definitely felt right.
Oh my God. I was like, oh no, I see this flat. And I understand it. Yeah. He's flat. He tells you he feels like dull and stupid and distracted all the time. And like he's at the bottom of a well and he can't see the way out.
Which is really rough, but also really real. But there is the bizarreness of the fact that they have Visser One testifying within a box that they
put him in
made.
A yurt box. Right. Sorry, this is the Phoenix Wright live action movie, because someone has invented new courtroom technology just to let Visser One like have a little speaker and somehow translate thought speak into talk box.
They also say that the box is lavender for some reason.
Yeah, right, for some Andalite reason, which is weird.
It's just like that's detail. The color that they felt that this technology.
That's the color for crime. Yeah.
Poor Jake has to sit on the stand and like as they're asking him these questions, he's having these like PTSD,
like straight up flashbacks. Yeah,
like he just seems like he's trapped in having to sit there and think about all this stuff, and he's testifying, but we barely see any of what he's actually saying because he doesn't remember what he's saying. He's just
right.
Dwelling on everything that happened.
And there's this brutal moment at the start where when they first call him to the stand as a witness, Visser One's defense lawyers object and say, we can't have this person testify. Jake should be under indictment himself as a war criminal for murdering. Did we mention?
Did we mention
17,000 Yerks?
Also, that Visser One has lawyers.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh my God. He has like a team of court-appointed lawyers who all look really sad because they know they're gonna lose.
Their main lawyers seem like it was like if Visser One could pick a lawyer, though, he picked the slimiest. Like they found someone who is like the human equivalent of Visser One.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course Jake, like, he doesn't say anything about this implication that he should be on trial for war crimes also, but you can tell he believes that. Like, he feels guilty about everything that happened. So he gives his testimony, but he's kind of checked out, and, like, he doesn't realize it's over. Someone has to remind him that you can get up.
You can leave the stand now. So he goes back to his hotel room, and he just sits alone staring at the wall for hours?
Yeah, unclear, but it's not great. But then Marco and Gorilla Morph is there, and Jake's like, what? And then the gorilla knocks him out? Which, for a brief moment, I was like, oh, God, did someone control Marco? Is something bad happening? But no, the next chapter is they literally drop him in the ocean, and he morphs dolphin, and he feels a moment of joy, thank God.
Yeah. So he spends probably as long as he possibly can out there in the water. Like he says, he swims until the dolphin body is tired out, which is very hard to do to a dolphin body. And when he finally staggers back up on the beach, Marco and Axe and Cassie are there, who have all conspired together to dump him in the ocean.
And he like swims ashore, demorphs, and they like finally have like a real conversation.
Yeah.
And they're basically like saying like, Jake, you can't blame, like, we know what happened, but you can't take all the blame for everything. We also made our own choices. Like Axe is like, I told you about that Yerk pool. Like he kind of led Jake into that. Like it's not all on Jake. He can't claim all of that for himself. And he has to, it happened. He has to continue living. Like Cassie's basically like, you need to somehow figure out a way to deal with this because you have to get past this.
Right. This can't be the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And Cassie tries so hard. Like she spends a long time talking with him about like the difference between a victim and a perpetrator.
Yeah.
And like, yes, we had to make horrible choices. And yes, like there were no ways out of this without really brutal things. Yeah. But the Yerks attacked us. And Jake, oh man, Jake
yeah, no, he's pushes back
to
it.
Say, like, that's great. I'm glad, but my problem is more personal. Like, when I saw those Yerks in the pool, I wasn't thinking, like, I have to make this choice to win the war.
Yeah. He knew, like, when we read that book, we were like, yeah. This is not good that Jake got. Yeah. And Jake knows that. Like, he's still at his core a good person. Like, he knows that that's not the way that you can live. Like, you can't do that all the time. You yeah. can't be in that place. That's a bad place to be.
And Marco, to his credit, like, steps up and is like, yeah, of course I know what you're thinking. Yeah. Like, you wanted them to suffer. You wanted to just murder them for doing all these horrible things to us. But war criminal, that status isn't about thoughts. It's yeah. about actions. And you did what you had to do in the course of the war.
Yeah.
And, like, Axe is nodding along and Marco is agreeing with him, but Cassie can't look him in the yeah. eyes, which is like,
no,
I think this is the end for Cassie and Jake. Yeah. If ever there was a point where, oh God, this is a year after the war is yeah. over too, which is the point where she was like, if a year after the war is over, you want to be together, come talk to me and we'll get together.
Oh my
so
God.
Here it is, a year after the war is over, and she can't even look him in the eyes.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
remember
it's
when
over.
We thought they were going to get married?
Yeah, no, I really liked them together, but it also feels very real. Like, it feels very naturally like, yeah, no, this is a point where they can't go back. They've grown.
Yeah, they can't come back from this. They've gone on very different paths. Yeah.
Like, they're different people now in yeah. ways that are very sad, but it also feels, like, natural for them to, I don't know. Like, I
no,
felt.
No, it feels yeah. very real. And, like, of course of course they would diverge. Yeah. But.
No, it's, like, really mature to have this happen in the book, but also yeah. like, as if I read, like, if I read this at 12 or whatever, I would have been like, no, they should get married.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely, that is, I have very clear memory of thinking just that thing.
But oh my God, it's really sad. But they're kind of trying to give Jake this pep talk of, like, you need to yeah. get it together and be
right, you have, like, a week left
to be
of
a
trial.
Living human.
Yep.
You have to get through this trial. We have to get Visser 1. Like, we can't.
Convicted. Yeah, yeah.
Like, if nothing else, we have to focus on that. Yeah.
So they do.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's very quickly wrapped up. I think it's presented as, like, an NBC newscast of, like, after a week of trial. Of
yeah.
trial? After a week of trial. Like, Visser 1 was convicted yeah. on, like, 25 out of 27 counts of war crimes
yeah.
and will be sentenced to, like, 37 consecutive life sentences.
Yeah. In a box.
In
guarded
a box.
By Hork. Like, they legitimately, like, give you, like, enough things to, I'm like, I guess I believe he won't be able to get out because he's
yeah.
slug in a box with a bunch of Hork-Bajir around him or something.
And that's the fourth ending of this book.
Page 95, there's still so much left.
Right, there's still a full third of the book left at this
yeah.
point, I think.
Because the next part is a two-year, like, it's 2 years after the war. After this. And
yeah.
Axe is in space, being a war prince. It rules.
Baby.
Like, he's
yeah.
he's really good.
Yeah, he's so thoughtful. He's, like, talking about, like, oh, I know the other officers expect me to just hand down a decision without an explanation, but I feel like if I really tell them why
yeah.
I'm thinking about these decisions, then they can grow into, like, better officers on their own, and that's what I really want.
Yeah,
which is, like,
he's learned.
I'm so proud of him.
Like, it's so sweet, because it's like, he's been affected by how Jake leads and how the Animorphs
yeah.
are. Like, he doesn't want to be, like, the, like, his former war princes.
The Andalite old
yeah.
guard, yeah.
He wants to, like, not, he wants to also not let the Andalites become what the, like, war machine had become, I think,
yeah.
of not questioning anything.
And despite all that, there's this, like, undercurrent to his narration of, like, nothing is the same
yeah.
as the war was. Like, I can't feel the same satisfaction.
Yeah.
And, like, I know I'm out here looking for trouble and, like, looking for danger in a time of peace because I don't feel the
yeah.
same way that I did as when I had these very clear paths to follow and these
yeah.
very clear decisions to make.
Like, look, I miss goofy food court acts, but this also feels right. Because he also is, like, you can't, he's been in war school since he was
right.
a little
and now
baby.
His job is literally to be a war prince.
Yeah.
That's, like, that is tough to avoid.
But I did like the detail, though, of since he's, like, a big deal war hero, the, like, pilot of the ship is super nervous and is trying
oh yeah
they're like trying to be careful as they're backing out of the ship parking lot or whatever and he like scratches it and like Axe is like, oh, I can't be too mean. Like, I can't have to, like, be really careful about what I say and not make him too upset. So he's just like, yeah, maybe next time a little lighter on the...
Check that calibration. Yeah, it's really cute. Axe is so good.
I'm like, he's doing, like, I'm glad he's flying around in space, but he's also, like, yeah, he's gonna be unfulfilled in a certain way for his whole life if he doesn't get this final mission.
Yeah, this felt very real. And then, okay, so now it takes a sudden turn into a horror movie.
Guess what? Alien, the movie.
Yeah, that's literally it. So he's like, in theory, they're out here looking for the Blade ship.
Yeah.
And they find, like, this abandoned alien structure, or this abandoned alien ship, and there's, like, what might be human, or, like, Earth-based DNA on it.
Yeah.
So they have to get in close and, like, get onto the ship to analyze and see, is it really DNA? Could this be a trace of, like, the Blade ship with departed with, like, all of those other controllers who used to serve under Tom on it?
So they do. Yeah, they're flying up.
And Axe is like, I'm going to lead this boarding party, even though technically I shouldn't, but I can't resist, like, the rush of war.
Yeah, he wants to have that moment. Also, all of the readings are telling them that...
Right, there's no life signs, it's fine, it's totally safe, like, this is a harmless ship.
Then we cut to Jake. We don't see what happens.
Yeah. There's like the narration takes a turn for like, it is giving you the signals of danger is here. Yeah. Like the juxtaposition of like, there's no life signs, but I feel nervous. And so does everyone else around me, but I can't do anything other than like charge in, tailblade at the ready. And then yes, we cut straight away to Jake.
Jake, I do like that Jake has a, like, vocation. Like, he's teaching. Yeah. He's teaching Morphin.
I'm proud of him. And he's trying hard.
Yeah, he's, like, he's limping his way back into being a person. Like, he's teaching these people way older than him, and they're calling him Professor, which is really sweet.
That's good. From Big Jake to Professor Jake is a good, that's a good nickname upgrade. Okay, side note, Big Jake, the biggest horse we talked about.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys on social media have seen that giant horse named Big Jake, but that's like, that's been bringing me joy.
Me all too. That's what I'm going to name. I'm going to go find the big horse in Breath of the Wild. I'm going to name it Big Jake.
Can you keep that horse? You can stable it?
We'll talk after the call.
Yeah, so Jake is, like, he's, like, talking to other humans and, like, you know, joking around with his students. He's alive.
Yeah.
He wrote a book.
He's now joined Marco and Cassie in writing best-selling books.
He said he mostly did it because he wanted to talk about Rachel and Tobias, who are
Which is very sweet.
Lost animorphs in this reality. He mentions that Cassie is still in Yellowstone. She has a boyfriend. She seems like she's doing okay, and he's kind of happy for her, which is the best I can hope for from Jake.
He bought a house for his parents. He's living on his own. He lives like a 20-minute walk away from Marco, and they've been hanging out more, which is really good.
Yeah, like, I'm glad that we got to see Jake a little bit less in a bad place. I also like the glimpse of the world... 2 years on, where he's saying, like, like, there are still tourists, but there's also some terrorist activity against the alien tourism. There's a lot of, like, cults that believe the end of the world is coming. Uh-huh. And all of that felt like, oh, yeah, of course, after all this happens.
Right. Like, this is the butterfly effect spiral of, like, the immediate impact of end-of-life tourism might be great, but of course, like, humans are humans, and, like, this is going to happen.
Also, like, you know, after the Yerk stuff, conspiracies and, like, cults, it all, that makes so much more sense.
Right?
Like, why not? Yep. Like, why not just go into a desert?
Already had the biggest possible one. Right.
And Jake also mentions that he's always watching for Tobias. Like, every time he sees a red-tailed hawk, he wonders if it's him.
The Department of Defense has been, like, flying him out in a helicopter from his house to these classes that he's teaching, which is really
cute. They're top-secret anti-terrorism morph classes.
It's good.
I love it. But
he's leaving class one day when he gets word. Oh, by the way, he has bodyguards follow him all the time.
Okay.
And he's like, I've mostly gotten used to ignoring them, but apparently there are a lot of, like, threats against his life.
Yeah.
So one of his security force gets word to him that there's an Andalite here asking for him. And he's like, oh, is it Axe?
And they're like...
which is, like, cute and excited.
But it's not. It is...
Menderash and Chasath from the Intrepid, which is Axe's ship.
And they're the official last survivors. Axe is not officially dead, but he's, like, missing in action. They assume he could be dead or captured because they went on that ship. They were sure nothing was alive on that ship. They were saying, like, it's so much harder to track the DNA that we found than a full life form. So you have to understand how wild it is that something happened on that ship.
But of course something did.
Yeah.
So the last communication they had from Axe was Axe told his whole party to draw their weapons. He ordered Menderash to go to condition one, which is like, defend the ship at all costs, get your shields up and get out of here. And then this dead alien vessel came back to life and fired a shot at the Intrepid.
Yeah. And so almost everyone died.
Yeah.
And Menderash also says, like, they said, like, I was having, like, a hallucination, but I could have sworn I heard Axe call out Jake from very far away. So they're coming to find Jake to tell him this.
Yep. So the last thing they saw was the blade ship popped out of this alien vessel. So apparently it had been hiding there all along. And it and this big, scary alien ship fled into Kelbrid space.
Yeah.
Jake's like, cool, what is that? Never heard of this alien before.
It's also, I don't know if this is a quirk of the ebooks we were reading, but Kelbrid was always in italics, which was honestly kind of creepy, and I hope was on purpose, because that really makes everything more creepy somehow.
Yeah, and I mean, it fits with the way the Andalites talk about them, because Menderash is describing them to Jake. He's like, they're really aggressive and warlike people. We have this treaty with them where we literally cannot cross into their space. They literally cannot cross into ours, or a war will start immediately. Also, we've never met them and they've never met us. Yeah. So it makes you wonder about, like, how was this negotiated? Is this handed down from, like, generations ago? Yeah.
And they're also saying, well, if they took Axe, they're going to want to, like, if they have Axe, they will want to keep him alive to, like, study him. So we would probably want to get him, but Andalites can't go get him.
Right. No Andalite ship piloted by an Andalite can enter Kelbrid space without starting a war.
But coincidentally, there's a Yurk cruiser somewhere that we happen to find. So maybe Jake, someone could go in that cruiser, and Jake's like, well, who would pilot it? And Menderash starts morphing human and is like, I'm human now, and he becomes an offlet, so he can join Jake on this mission, which is cool. Menderash, last minute final teammate.
Read a lot of good fanfic about Menderash.
We'll talk about you seem that cool. later.
So
Jake has this new drive to save Axe, and I think he knows that this is, like, I'm clinging to this as, like, I'm going to do this last-ditch mission. Because I have to save Axe, but also something in my life.
Yeah.
Cut to Cassie is hiking.
I love Cassie so much.
I'm so glad that one of them has a life that's okay. Like, considering everything that happened, she's doing okay. Like, she's hiking in Yellowstone with her boyfriend, who seems like a cool guy, who gets how much Jake means to her, and she
also honestly seems to love him. Yeah. His name is Ronnie. He's like, he has a similar position to hers. He's like protecting Yellowstone. Yeah. I think he works for the government also.
Yes.
She talks a lot about, like, I've been hiking with him a lot. We both really enjoy it. I hardly ever morph, so I'm getting, like, really buff calves, and I've had to buy this whole new wardrobe.
Oh, yeah, she was
so,
like,
now Rachel would make fun of me because all I wear is plaid. But she would still make fun of me.
I also like that she was like, well, maybe Rachel would be, like, excited that instead of Walmart calling me for endorsements, it's Patagonia.
It was really good.
Like,
I remember being really disappointed in Cassie for not going with them when I read this as a wee baby, but now I'm like, I'm so proud of her.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud of everyone else for, like, recognizing that this is what was best for her.
Yeah, like, I wish she had gone with them, just because I was like, I miss having Cassie or Rachel around.
Yeah, I do think, like, the boys of the crew need balance very badly, but
also,
I respect their choice.
Yeah, I love that all of them want to keep, like, that. Like, I feel like it's, like, all of them love her so much and want her to live this life that they can.
Yeah.
And, like...
Yeah, and it also, it doesn't feel like they decided for her.
No.
Like, the fact that Jake came, or spoilers, that in two pages Jake is going to come talk to her, but, like, the fact that he came... even though he told her no, like, if she really wanted to do this, he could not have stopped her. So it does feel like it was her choice, too.
Yeah, and it like, it feels like they respect that she has this life, and she's also, like, she's giving back in a way that none of them are equipped to at this point. Like, she's working with the government to, like, keep these Hork-Bajir and, like, other places safe, and, like, she's doing all this stuff that, like, they can't. When, I think during, like, the Animorphs series, like, she was kind of the quote-unquote weak link in terms of fighting, I guess.
Right.
And I think that was always, like, she kind of resented that, but now she's able to, like, help in a way that they can.
She's in her element. Yeah.
And it's like seeing, like, someone you went to high school with, like, doing well.
Thriving.
And you're like, I don't know you at all anymore, but I'm, like, really happy for you. You seem really good. You're, like, in a good relationship. Yeah. You're, like, climbing hills.
You got that L.L. Bean plaid on, and I am very happy for your hiking boots.
But, yeah, it is, like, Jake shows up, and
she spots a falcon and is immediately like, Ronnie, this is an Animorph. Yeah. Like, she still knows that, even though it's been, like, 3 years.
And Ronnie's, like, a cool enough guy to be like, hey, I'm gonna go over out of earshot and do my thing.
Right. Come meet me when you're done. I'll give you some privacy.
Which, like, that also made him go up in my books, and I'm like, you know what? Yep. You found yourself an okay dude, Cassie. Yeah. Good for you. This is kind of the bare minimum, I guess, but I'm glad that it's, like, someone who respects
her. Our standards are so low,
So Jake lays out what's going on. He doesn't ask her to come, but she's, like, she does kind of assume, like, okay, so where do I meet you? And he's kind of saying, like, no, I don't think you should. Like, you can, but I don't think, like, he's there to say goodbye, which he doesn't outright say to her, but...
Yeah. Oh, but she knows. She starts crying partway through this conversation the second that he's, like, telling her this is her place, and she's, like, Earth is her place, and she's doing what she was born to do and what she needs to do. And, like, that's not the case for Marco and Tobias and him, and they all know it, but she should stay.
Yeah, and I think she also, like, she is doing good things on Earth. Like, she doesn't feel a need to correct him, because I think she knows that she's helping in her own way. Like, she's
right, and she doesn't feel the same kind of loss that the rest of them do, or, like, this weird mixed feelings about the end of the war.
Yeah, I think it's, like, she's able to funnel that
into like a productive way. Right,
she, like, not everyone can do that, and I'm really glad that they're letting her live this life where she's found something that brings her, like, happy. Like, I'm glad that one of them is happy, because I think if there wasn't one of them having some kind of bright, it would be so hard to get through.
She notices when he's explaining the situation to her, she sees him smile and is like, oh, that's the way Rachel smiles. It's like the self-mocking swagger. She's like, why does this look familiar? That's exactly the same way that Rachel used to smile before she went into a battle.
I didn't notice it this time, but they mentioned that again later on.
Yeah, at the end of the book, which is like, oh, it's a tasty sandwich of despair.
It's kind of cool, because it feels like she's still there.
It's good.
But also, oh, it's not good in some ways, too. So basically, he's here to say goodbye to her, but also to find out where Tobias is, because he's reasoned out that she must know where he is.
Yeah, and of course she does. Yeah, of course.
So she tells him, and then in her narration says that she knew that was the last time she would see him. Like,
rough stuff.
Yeah, it's rough, but also I like that she has that closure, and
I think it would have hurt her so badly if they had all left without, like, even giving her this moment.
Yeah, I think that would have, like, hurt her way more. Like, this is, like, really sad, but felt right.
Hard, but more important. Yeah, that's this book. Yeah. Really sad, but felt right.
Cut to Marco. Thank God we need a breather, where at least Marco's grief is cloaked in jokes, where he's morphing a lobster to get something out of his pool.
Oh my god, he dropped his car keys at the bottom of his pool. By the way, he has, like, a bigger mansion now.
He has a butler name that he calls Weatherby. That is not the man's name.
That is not his butler's name, no. He has cars. Yeah. He has a girlfriend. He has a jet. He has a lot of millions of dollars. I don't remember how many, but it sounds like a lot.
Oh, speaking of girl, he's been trying to set Jake up with, like, models, and eventually had to finally stop because Jake just, like, wasn't checked in enough to care. Like, there's so much going on with Marco. He's morphing lobster just to get something out of his pool, but also clearly because he's incredibly bored.
Yeah.
And as he is morphing, we haven't had a description of a horrible morph in a long time. We get one more where he's like, there's like a shell, a fingernail Ugh. Going across his body, no. little legs no, erupting. Thank you. Doorbell rings. It's Jake. He comes in while Marco is mid-morph, and like,
Good.
Marco's like talking to him as he's demorphing back to human, which is great.
Jake is gently mocking him, which is yeah. very good.
But Tobias is there with Jake. No.
Right. So wait. I think right before he goes to see Marco, there's like a brief aside with Tobias. This is the only Tobias perspective chapter we get in the book. And it's brutal. Yeah.
I think very sad. I accidentally skipped it because it was really sad.
Too sad. Yep.
Yeah. Rewind.
Tobias is in his meadow having a standoff with a mouse.
He's been a which bird. Is great. He's been a bird for a while, but he is trying to get this mouse, but this is like his like
nemesis mouse. Mouse
nemesis. This is like when you're a bird, what else are you going to do with your time? It's something. Yep. But there's a human couple camping in his meadow, and he's upset by, like, he knows enough about him. Like, he's emotionally aware of the fact that it is irrational to be upset about this couple, and they don't really look like him and Rachel, but they remind him of him and Rachel.
They're clearly in love, and it's, like, reminding him of, like, when he had fantasies about, like, what their lives would be like after the war. Like, maybe some of this is what he saw for the two of them.
So he's upset about that. He's thinking this through.
He's, like, he's gearing himself up to, like, morph something scary, like a wolf, and, like, threaten them away.
But Toby comes in with a wolf, scares them away.
And this is like, I'm glad Tobias seemed so chill about Toby that I have to assume he's been hanging out with the Hork-Bajir, which is really
I need to
believe that he's like hanging out with his namesake, like, and like telling stories around the campfire.
Like, if nothing else, they would have each other. Like, I think she would need him too. So she and this wolf show up. Tobias assumes it's Cassie because he has been in contact with Cassie a little bit, but no, it is Jake.
The couple starts acting like horrible tourists and like taking photos and like screaming and like fanning over them, because obviously this is an animorph, like demorphing in front of them. And Tobias is like, if you're going to stay in my meadow, you have to sit down and be quiet. And they do. Yeah.
It's his meadow. He shares it with that owl who comes out at night, but that's okay. Yeah.
And this one horrible mouse.
This one terrible mouse with its tail partly bitten by him off, but keeps getting away. It's this wily little...
There's a red wall story in there somewhere. So Tobias sees it's Jake, is like, hello, Jake. How are you? Nice to see you. I'm going to leave. And like gets ready to fly away.
Jake says it's about Axe. And Tobias thinks to himself that he could fly away. Jake couldn't stop him, but he, like, mentioned, like, he traps himself in this again by listening to Jake, because, like, he can't not hear what's happened.
Yeah, and that's the phrasing he uses, too, is, like, he knows that if he stays, he'll be trapped again, which is, like, a really harsh frame through which to look at Tobias's participation in this whole war, right? Because a lot of his story has been, like, feeling trapped in a situation, feeling trapped, like, between bodies, and, like, how much of this would Tobias have signed on for if he had other people who loved him besides Rachel? I don't know.
Like, it's like he has these emotional connections to these people, but it's only brought him pain, so it feels like instead of being, like, a good thing, it's, like, only... a trap to feel something.
It's so sad, because obviously we shouldn't, like, emotional connections aren't leashes. They're ties, and they're bonds, but they
affect you
when you're being hurt by them.
Like, I can see where he's coming from, and it's really sad.
So our sad bird boy.
Bird boy's on board. Team's back together. It's real sad.
That's the sticker in the back of my car. Says bird boy on
board.
You,
like, slap the little family stickers. You got the Jake, you got a bird. Are we going to get another boy? Time to check Marco.
Let's find out.
Morphin Lobster sees Jake and Tobias.
Oh, and there's this moment where he says, like, as soon as Tobias shows up, he can see his old wartime reality, like, underneath the bones of this bright life that he's built for himself. And it was, like, such a jarring moment of, like, of course it's still there, and of course you can still see it, and of course the second, like, two people from this old life show up and remind you of it, like, it's as fresh as it was never gone.
And he says everything around him feels fake all of a sudden, because it is for him. Like, this is him trying to pretend he's fine by building up this life that is what he thought he would want. I think he is in some ways happy, but
I don't want to take that away from
him. But there is a very strong undercurrent of denial about everything, and he's definitely super bored. And he says, "You're about to ruin my life, aren't you?" When he sees them. But, like, he can't not. Like, he jokes around with Tobias about, like, getting the old gang back together, and Tobias is like, "I'm old for a red tail," which made me heartbroken, but Marco's like, "I age in gorilla years," or whatever. So, Marco...
They have, like, one last harsh conversation about Marco's like, "Jake, I know why you're doing this. Like, you've been obsessed with the war ever since it was over." Jake's like, "Yeah, this is another chance. I'm going to do it right this time." And Marco, like, takes a deep breath and then goes on this tirade of, like, "No, absolutely not. We can't go into this with that attitude. You will get us all killed. Like, you won this war because you didn't scare and you didn't second guess yourself and you did what had to be done. But now that the war is over, you're doubting literally every choice you ever make. Yeah. So I am only in if you agree to trust your instincts and make stupid, dangerous, exciting choices."
And so, of course, Marco's in. As, like, he's saying this and he knows he's in.
Oh, God, it kills me. Like, reading these children being so blasé about, like, casually talking about stepping into another war breaks my heart. There, shatters it, stomps on
there
it.
There is, like, a little glimpse of their younger selves, though, in this. Because, like, I think that's what's happening is, like, they're... able to tap into
they're putting on their old coats.
Like, it's sad and they're headed into a situation that we don't fully know what happens, but I also get to hear Marco say, "You got us up to our butts in alligators and got us back out." So, like, there is something
there's
joyful
a seductiveness
about it,
too, like, but,
but yeah, it's also like, you know, this is not gonna end well. Like, I think they all know that.
But I am also selfishly very glad to have them together.
I was like, "Jake's gonna get the team back together." And then I remember, like, what they're doing, and it's not great. Yeah. Jake even got a couple of his students to join them.
Oh, he picked them based on their lack of close family.
Jake is, look, he's learned.
He's a very practical man.
And he and Marco are bantering. Marco is flirting.
Jake's like, "Marco, if I hadn't asked you to come, you would have killed me." And Marco's like, "Yes, Jake, I would have."
One of Jake's...
Marco's floating with Jean... flirting with Jean Girard, who's this, like, French woman in Jake's counterterrorism class.
One of Marco's...
Which is great.
One of Marco's really great flirting, like, lines is, "Hi, I'm Marco. I have my own TV show."
Which is... He's such a child.
So good. Yeah, he's...
And, of course, Jean shuts him down immediately, which is,
like,
great.
Like, he's those child stars that don't age past the age they became famous because, you know, Marco was in a war, so his development may have stalled. But he's still Marco, and I'm still delighted.
So they have a brief caper, which was, like, just like old times. I miss when everything was this simple. They don't have to kill anyone. They just have to, like... trick some Andalites into letting them steal this yurt ship out from under
and
their noses.
And it's a cruiser, and it looks cool, and it's beautiful, and they're about to board, but I keep wanting to say...
Menderash?
I keep wanting to call him Mendelssohn, which is the teapot. The...
Oh my god.
The, like, genetics man. Anyway.
The squares. The
Punnett square. Oh, I guess it was a different guy. Anyway.
No. See, he also did, yes.
Anyway, he's like, "Oh, well, it's an Andalite custom to name the ship before we board it, if you don't mind. Like, that's what I think we should do." And Jake's like, "Yeah, but also an Earth custom is that a ship is always female," or you refer to it as a she, anyway.
And Tobias is like, "She's beautiful, and she's dangerous, and she's exciting."
So they name it the Rachel, because of course it's the Rachel, so she's, like, with them, which is really cool, and, like... Rachel would love that. Like, that would be, like...
Yes.
Like, it feels really right, but also is sad.
Yeah, better than her monument.
Yeah,
even.
I think this is, like, what she would want.
Yes.
So, They get on the ship.
Then, oh my god. They get on the ship.
They get on the ship. They look through the supplies. There are...
The Andalites left them some food. They left them some protein bars. They left them a bunch of air supply and some water.
And 6 dozen frozen Cinnabons. I'm so... There are, like, 3 specific, like, brand name mentions of Cinnabon, which yep. is... Thank you, Kay Applegate, for this moment of levity right after yes. I felt every emotion about the ship naming. Thank right. you.
And now you felt the 7th yeah. emotion, yeah. flavor. There's a really good aside where Santorelli, one of the 2 people from Jake's class, is like, do Andalites have a sense of humor? And Jake is like, you know, we've never been
you know,
certain. Neither,
you know what, Jake? I'm with you. Not sure, but I love yeah. it. Like, I love it. I also like that they mention Andalite civilians are a lot more, like, fun and cool
yeah,
than
Yeah, or they're, like, a couple of degrees less horrible yeah. than Andalite military.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, those tourists are probably, like, some cool people to hang out with once they yeah. stop shoveling everything around in their mouth.
right, if you can get in a
they
word.
They also mentioned that the cigarette lobby like the Andalites oh because they like eating cigarette butts. Oh, boy.
Oh, bless.
Okay, so they're in space for 6 months.
Yeah, I had forgotten yeah. this. This goes by in the space of, like, 2 paragraphs. Yeah. Like, Jake casually mentions, like, we spent 4 days in Z-Space. Then we popped out where they last saw the Blade ship, and I was really excited. Or I guess Marco is reading at this point. But, of course, the Blade ship isn't there because space, it turns out, is
real
big.
So they're...
Real, real big.
So they're floating around.
There's almost no mention of what they do. Yeah. Thankfully, there's a lot of fan fiction about the 6
Thank
months
God.
They spent. Watching old DVDs
like
on this, on the Rachel.
So they're in space for a while. Marco mentions they've watched Airplane many times. He said to explain every bit of it to this poor human Nofflet that they have on board. He also played like Tomb Raider or something on the like screen of the ship.
Whatever system
like,
he brought.
He's like plugged into the ship. So they've, you know, had a vacation in space while they're looking for this ship that may have their friend aboard.
Right. For 6 months. Half of a year. Jake might have turned 20. He might not be a
they
teen
could have
anymore.
A space birthday. With
They light a single candle in the last remaining Cinnabon.
They pop out into Kelbrid space, and the Blade ship finds them, rather than the other way around. And it hails them, I guess.
Yes. There's one last Star Trek joke, because of course there is. No, I'm very happy they're able to sneak this in.
They're still able to joke about Star Trek. They call their ship the Enterprise.
They call it the Enterprise, and like a human controller comes on board and talks to Santorelli, and Marco is like prompting him off screen, like, say you're more of a Captain Kirk man.
They're trying to play this
off. So they're
off.
Pretending, they're trying to pretend like, because they're on a Yerk ship, they are a crew of escaped controllers who are fleeing the end of the Yerk Empire, and they're seeking sanctuary with a Blade ship, which they heard was out here.
And the controller they're talking to says that he is part of the One.
Right. Here's the horror movie part again. He's very casually like, oh, sure, you're totally welcome. Like, come chill with us, as long as you're willing to place yourself under the command of the One.
Yeah, this is the new Empire. Because they're like, what are you talking about, the Empire? Like, that's over. And this guy's like, oh, you didn't hear about the new Empire we're going to build with the One? Because we are all part of the One, and it is great.
Hang on, I'll go get the One for you. Just hold this line,
please.
Yeah,
the One shows up, and it's a lot.
I don't like it. I mean, it's very spooky.
It's very a very good, scary, like, it.
Yeah.
The image of it is, like, really powerful and cool, but also horrific, because this thing shows up, it projects a whole bunch of faces in their minds. They're all feeling a lot of fear when they look at it. They're feeling like this is the ultimate evil.
And they've looked at Visser
they've looked
one.
At
like, they know
they've
evil.
Looked at some evil, and then the final face that flashes for the longest is Axe's, and then Axe Projection's mouth opens up into a bunch of fangs because you know he has a mouth now that it's filled with fangs that are like red.
That's cool. Beautiful blue deer, but his face like splits open in this
it's
horrible dripping maw.
So scary, but also I love it.
Yeah,
like this is so good, but also. We are in the final pages of this book. So they're trying to decide what to do.
And the one kind of short circuits this by saying, Jake, Big Jake the Yurt Killer, I know you're there.
So Jake smiles, Rachel smile, and tells them to ram into the blade ship. And then that's the end of the book?
That's it. That's the end of the series. I know. The first K.A. Applegate letter is the one at the very end of this book, which I think went out with the original printing of the book, which is her talking to the fans about, like, thank you for reading, thank you for being loyal, and a bunch of very sweet things. And, like, I wanted the Animorphs to go out fighting the way they
came. She also opens it with, sorry, that was, like, a rough ending, huh? Like, it's so, like, I am weirdly satisfied by this ending, but I also really, really want to know what happens next, or like what they planned to have happen versus what the fan theories, like I want all of that delicious.
That's what I want, is I want to hear about, like, now that you've told me about this Megamorph thing, I want to know what that was. But I also still feel like this works.
Yeah.
Like, this is the only way it could end in a very real sense of, like, they're always going to be in danger. There's always going to be something else there. There isn't a neat fairy tale wrap up.
I think the Megamorph thing was dropped fairly early, so I think she said that some of it got folded in with this. But I really want to know what... I think she mentioned something about... like, I can look up this interview for next time, but some of it was like...
Yeah.
The plan was for three books. Like two of them were scrapped. One of them was going to be some kind of extra book. It was like... She referred to it as a what-if, or like check-in with blank... or something like that. So some kind of, like, we would check in with some character. And there would be a Megamorph. But she didn't say anything about it. So it's possible it was just, like, in the docket and then they canceled it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I want to know everything about this choice because it's so...
I know. Because also... It's such a powerful choice.
And also, like, this evil feels like... It feels like Father. It feels like Kryak.
Yeah. Oh, it feels so much like, like Father, because it is an absorbing force of, like, a great conglomeration of evil.
And it also feels like I know there was, I think it was in the AMA when Michael Grant was being asked, like, one fan was talking about this ending where they're ramming into the thing, like, they're ramming into this, that it's like a callback to an Andalite Chronicles when Elfanger rams into the black hole, and I think that starts a new reality or something.
Right, that's what sets off, like, the time matrix, right, is when he got sucked into it. Black holes in the Animorphs universe do some weird things, because that's also what made the Elemist and Kryak gods, was, like, they fell into a black hole and got unraveled.
Well, because, I mean, this bad thing feels like a black hole of things it's absorbed, like Father. So it's interesting, because I think Michael Grant's response was something like, the coin has dropped, or, like, something kind of vague that, like, I think he might have either thought, like, they might have either been trying to imply something, like, something might happen beyond what you think, or...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, it's an ambiguous ending,
so
right? Because it's not... It's dangerous, and it's horrifying, and it's frightening, and you don't know for sure what's going to happen to them, but it leaves a lot of possibilities open. It's not a definite they all died, and it's absolutely not a definite they all survived.
It feels like also a better place to leave off with them than anywhere. Yeah. Because, like, this is where they...
Yeah, than any of the other endings in the book.
Like, this is where they feel alive, but also, oh my god, I want to know. I want every scrap of, like, what they were thinking of with this. I want to know every fan theory involving, like, but also, like, it is, I'm happy with this as an ending, actually.
Yeah.
I would have been, like, if I read this in sequence, I probably would have had a way different reaction. So I think that's why the fandom sometimes is divided on how they feel about this.
Yeah.
But I feel good about it. I liked it.
I feel the same way, and I didn't expect to, because I remember very clearly being so frustrated as a baby reading this, with, like, a very strong drive to have to know what happens to them. But I think reading it now, I agree with you. I feel like this ending is an illustration of, like, a really strong choice, not just from the author's perspective, but like they're ending this like being active. Yeah. Like they're ending this like taking the only action that they can to save their friend. And like, I don't know, the threads don't feel tied off, but I feel like I can see the directions they were going to go.
Yeah, it felt like you saw everybody reach their best potential that we could, at least within.
Yeah, in like horrible, tragic ways because of the limitations of war.
Well, but, it was like Rachel reached her moment of perfection.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Like, it feels like
we can't. Yeah. I will cry again. But I will have to shut this podcast
it's
down.
Like, it's that catharsis that
the emotional release.
But yeah, man, I keep thinking about it, which is good. That's a good sign of a good book.
Animorphs is good. That's our thesis. Is this
actually,
this children's book series is good and important.
This book series,
and worth
that we read
time.
The whole thing.
Yeah, changed
actually
my life.
Good?
Made me excited about stories.
Ah.
Oh boy. So so we're gonna do one more episode
because I know I'm gonna be thinking about this and looking up stuff, and hopefully you guys, if you can link us some cool post, like if you can link us theories or essays.
Send us, this is the time to send us everything you got. We'll get on the Heractiles website, which I know has the info about the second letter, and we'll both read that before the next episode. I think we also want to put out a specific call in addition to cool fan theories or trivia or tidbits for any questions you might have for us about Animorphs generally or about Morphcast, Morph Club. I know the name of our podcast. We've only been doing it for 70 episodes.
Like, we're not promising we can actually give you, like, answers on anything factual, but, like...
Yeah, oh my god, no. But feelings, we're
like,
for.
I feel like with podcasts I listen to where people are reacting to something, there's always, like, one thing where I'm like, but what about this thing? What do you think about this? So, in case anyone has any questions about...
Yeah.
Related to that.
I will put together my fic rec list. That's going to be my task for the next 2 weeks, is I will put together Carrie's personal preferences of favorite Animorphs fanfic. But I also, I think you guys, if you want to, you, everyone listening, want to just send me your favorite fics, I'll make a separate list of here are all the things you like and have sent to me.
I'm excited. Like, I did read part of a future fic way, way back when. Which, like, when I got to this, I was like, oh, more of that was canon than I thought.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
So I was like, it's weird that in this story, Marco's, like, a celebrity, but I don't know. I guess it'll be explained. Man, I, like, this book, this book, this series, these kids.
That's good. I love it very much.
I had such a good time with these kids having a horrible time.
Yeah. it's okay. We don't have to have a smart wrap up. That's for next
Thank
episode.
God. We have
we
more
can
time.
Just end this one. So add us, please. Add us on Twitter at Morph Clubcast, or using the hashtag Morph Clubcast, or join us on Facebook. If you search for Morph Clubcast, you can join the Morph Club Clubhouse, which is a friendly and wonderful place.
So,
if you want to leave us a review and rating on iTunes, I know it's our last couple of episodes, but people can still jump on and that'll help them find us down the line in the future. And if you want to support the show, you can find Megan, who does all of the editing and production work for the show, on Patreon at Megan Brennan.
And Carrie is on Patreon at Carrie Draws. And The Adventure Zone, which she drew and helped adapt, came out and it's so good. And it's on the bestseller list. And we're also proud of her. That's it.
Thanks, Megan. And I'm so glad your Gerblins fan art is now out in the world to make me suffer greatly.
Yes. So, we'll see you next time. Final time with these Animorph kids. But, you know, we're still alive. We're still around.
They're always in our hearts, yes.
Okay,
until next time.
Bye.
Bye.